Hey, this is Christian Horn of Part-Time Fanboy, and this episode is the big Part-Time Fanboy Halloween episode, in which Paul Edwards and myself discuss our top 10 favorite horror movie moments. The reason that I'm recording this intro is because Paul and I got a little carried away, and the episode ran a little long. Actually, it ran a lot long. So we're splitting it up into two parts, and hopefully you will enjoy this episode and come back next week for part two of our top 10 horror movie moments. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian. I'm here with Paul.
Good morning.
And we are going to talk about, I don't know if it'll be top 10 horror moments or just top horror moments or whatever, but this, to start off with, I am like the worst dad in the whole wide universe.
Oh, no, that's not true.
It's horrible. I still am like choked up thinking about this. So yesterday they had a big Halloween fundraiser at Tallinn School, at my daughter's school. And, you know, it's this big thing. It's huge. I mean, there's rides and, you know, booths and all this stuff. Well, one of the big things that they keep hyping up is they have this haunted house, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so you keep hearing people talk about it. They're going to build it. So, of course, my daughter wants to go inside the haunted house. And they have a section for just the little kids, you know. She's five. So they have a section for the little kids, and that's fine. You put on 3D glasses. She had a little friend of hers who was, he was really scared. He didn't want to go in. But Tallinn wanted to go in. So I'm like, okay, we'll go in. And they give you the 3D glasses, and it's neat. You go in, and there's, I don't know how they do it. It's 3D paint or whatever. And you go in, and it's a little spooky, but she can handle it. And
sure,
you come out of that section, and you give your glasses back, and then you're supposed to go into the really big haunted house. So I'm like, we're not going to do that because, you know, she's too small. And she's like,
sure,
Daddy, please, Daddy, please, Daddy, I want to go into the... And I said, no, we're not going to do that. So then we get out of the little one, and her friend wants to go in now that she's gone in. And so my wife and her friend are, oh, can you please take him in with you? He wants to go in. Okay, fine. So we go back into the little person's haunted house, and they both have fun, and they're excited, and, you know, the 3D glasses and everything. Mm-hmm. So we come out, and Tallinn is still asking to go into the bigger haunted house. So then the moms are, why don't you go in and see what it's like? First of all, I forget to mention that it's $10 to pay for a wristband to go into the haunted house. So the little haunted house is just tiny. So we're paying $10 to go in for 2 or 3 minutes so the kids can look at 3D paint and maybe some spiders and, you know, on the wall or whatever. It's neat. It's I'm underselling it, but for a little kid, I'm sure it's like really cool. But so I say, okay, I go into the larger haunted house, and now at this point it's still daylight, so nothing is scary. You know, it's not dark, it's not, but there's a lot of like gory things, like skeletons,
sure,
there's blood on the walls, like help me, there's a section with like, you know, entrails and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, and it's not scary to me. I don't think it's scary. It's daylight, it's gross, but it's not scary. They did have, it's freaky, it's a little freaky. They have people dressed in costumes, but nobody's
right,
running at you and trying to scare you or anything like that.
Right.
So I come out, and I'm not really that scared, but I know, I think that it's not appropriate for a little kid, okay?
Okay.
So I come out, and I'm like, I don't know, and you know, my wife and her friend are asking me, like, what is it? What is it? Are people coming at you? No, there's nobody coming at you. Nobody's jumping out and trying to scare you. It's mostly gore. Oh, well, you know, Talon's friend. Oh, well, he's fine with that. He likes that stuff. Now, I have to say that I see myself being very much a good parent in the fact right. that my daughter has never been exposed to anything like that. She's seen right. Paranorman. She's maybe seen come across like a cover of The Walking Dead, you know, but she doesn't know that stuff exists. Like right. it's out of her purview. It's she doesn't even know that people do this to each other, that they're serial killers, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I'm like, I don't think Talon's still saying, please take me in, please take me in. And Amy says, if she wants to go in. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think this is a good idea. But I didn't think it was horrifying. Like, nobody's boo-boo. So we go in, and we open the door, and we go in. And obviously, I got talked into it. So we go in. So we go in, and of course, it's the dad that has to do this, right? The dad, not the mom.
Sure.
So we go in, and Amy just walked into the room. She's getting mad at me. She's saying, you're not going to put this on me. I was talked into it, too. Can you hear her talking?
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Well, you know, I'm already getting some vital life lessons from this. So.
Yeah, well, if you're a parent out there with a little kid. Anyway, so I go in, and it's, you know, the first thing is like skeletons, and they're covered in kind of blood, and there's like gore, and she's like, I've never seen anything like, you know, I'm watching her. I'm not just ignoring him. I'm saying, it's okay. But, you know, nobody's jumping out. Nobody's scaring anything, you know. But halfway through, I'm starting to see we're in trouble. Because she's doing this thing. She does this thing where she pulls on her upper lip. And she's doing that, and I'm saying, you know, we don't. And the point I knew we were in trouble. We walk around the corner where it was gonna get really bad. Was we walk around the corner, and they have one of these things where it's like a guy hung upside down, and he's like twitching around. He's wrapped in burlap, and he's twitching. And that's when I knew it was all done, because, and we still have another section to go through. And
I think in general, anytime you walk in on someone who's hanging upside down, covered in burlap, it's over.
Yeah. So we walk out, and by the time, so we get out, and she's not crying. She's scared, but she's not crying. And then the last thing you do when you walk out the haunted house, there's a tuft of air that's supposed to scare you. And as soon as that tuft of air hit her a little behind, it was all over. The waterworks. She went running to mommy, sobbing. And I am just like, I'm the worst effing dad that ever existed in the whole. Because now I'm responsible for exposing my child to this, who's never been exposed to anything like this before. And
couple of points, Christian.
Yeah.
At least you were able to expose her to it in a controlled environment.
Yeah, I guess.
I think is really the point of the whole haunted house experience anyway.
Yeah.
It's the idea of, you know, sort of exposing kids to the scary horrors of the world, but in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up going to them. We have them at our school. You know, I think they do serve an important purpose.
Yeah.
Second, if there's any lesson out of this, it's that 3D is the hook that will draw you into the thing that will tear your soul apart.
Well, you don't have to wear the 3D glasses in the grown-up haunted house. It's
No. That's just the little hook to get the little kids interested. Oh, look, 3D. It's neat.
I can't. Oh, my God.
The next thing you know, you're watching everything in 3D.
Yeah, yes. I was on the verge of tears. That's how broken up I was about this, because I was like, oh my God, I am totally responsible for destroying my child's innocence. I just like, man.
It's either going to be you in a controlled way, or it's going to be someone else.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess that's a good point. I mean, I still feel badly about it. So anyway, I'm responsible for, I wouldn't say maybe my child's first horror moment, but But what's interesting is the kids, she wanted to go back and look at the haunted house later on. Mm-hmm. She wants mm-hmm. to go back because then they started doing the dried ice with the smog or the fog or whatever. Right. So then she wants to go back and look at it. And so we're hanging out looking at it. She doesn't want to leave. She's hanging around the outside of it, you know, with her friend. And then all of a sudden you hear this chainsaw go off. And everyone's like, what's that? And a dude wearing like a black cloak comes running out with a fake chainsaw, obviously, but it looks real. And all the kids just, it's like they're ants. They're just gone. They're running away. It's the funniest thing ever. And then, of course, Talon, never heard of a chainsaw. What's a chainsaw? Oh, you cut down trees with it. Oh, what happens if you use it on people? Oh, boy. Oh,
there you go. There's the million-dollar question
right there. Oh, God. Oh, anyway, so...
Well, how old were you when you first started watching, like, sort of scary movies?
Well, this is... I mean, so this is... I was a very sensitive child, and I was not... into horror movies. I was terrified of stuff. And this will lead into our conversation because obviously our horror movie moments, like to me, this is not about like what's the scariest, what's the best, what's the mm-hmm. just mostly sort of like what was a good sort of movie going experience or sort of kind of what freaked you out or what you thought was absolutely. Fun or what the most powerful moment was, you know. And so for me, like as a little kid, more often than not, if I was taken to a horror movie or something like that, I was usually dragged out kicking and screaming. Any adult who tried to take me to a horror movie for a long time was not finishing the horror movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for me, horror movies were not a big thing up until I got older, probably in like my teenage years. And the first one that I remember sitting all the way through was Night of the Living Dead. And in black and white, and it was on cable, and sitting there in my room, I was lucky enough or unfortunate enough to have a TV with cable in my room growing up, and which I'm not going to be doing for my kid, but you know, watching Night of the Living Dead in the dark, in the middle of the night, and sneaking it so that my mom wouldn't know I was watching it. And just like, what is this? Night of the Living Dead? I've never heard of it. And watching it, and then my mom bursting in and being like, what are you doing in the middle of the... Scaring the crap out of me. Just like scared the crap. So the movie creeped me out, but my mother bursting in on me just... like literally having my heart jump out of my chest. So that's like one of my big horror movie moments, like as a kid. What about you? When did you start watching them? Like, how old were you?
You know, I was pretty young, I think, when I started watching them because, and it wasn't, funny enough, wasn't anything on cable that did it. It was the television station in Hawaii that, you know, aired these things sort of right after school. And, you know, I was sort of a latchkey kid, so, you know, I ended up watching these things that, you know, they were, I'm sure that they were probably edited for television, but, you know, I didn't know that, and they were certainly scary enough. So I think probably, like, one of the scariest moments for me was, it's a similar thing where, you know, I was sitting home, I'm watching, it was one of the Hammer Mummy movies. Yeah. So it was one of the first ones in color. And, you know, there was some sort of a struggle behind the door, and then they had a shot of the bottom of the door, and all of a sudden this, you know, blood sort of like comes from under the door, and you know, it's in this bright red, you know, and I'm just like, whoa, you know, freaking out. And like right then the phone rang, and it was just like enough to, you know, send me through my, you know, send me through the recliner right there. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's that's funny because like a lot of times it does tend to be something sort of from outside the movie that ends up like sort of setting us off. You know, but yeah, that was the first, I guess I would have been like 7 or 8 there when that happened.
Yeah. Oh wow, you were really young. I think Night of the Living Dead, it's probably like 7th grade, 8th grade maybe, where I found the courage to sit through something. And for me, like, but at what point did you, because it took me a long time to Because were you scared of them after that?
I always just had a real strong interest in it. I mean, I used to read everything about it. The other thing, too, is I started making movies really early on. Like, I started making movies at 7. So...
Oh, wow.
In reading about these things and reading the magazines and stuff like that, I mean, I guess I was lucky enough to really have sort of a strong sense of, like, okay, this is fake, you know, these are actors, and, you know, they're telling a story. You know, so I knew that pretty instinctively on from a little kid, so I didn't, you know, I didn't really ever get, like, super freaked out by any of it, just because I was always able to be like, okay, yeah, it's just a movie.
Yeah, no, not me. I remember literally as a little kid, literally, whatever, I remember clearly, that's the phrase I should use, as a little kid really enjoying the movie Grease, you know, John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John. But in New York City at the time when Grease premiered, the trailer, and I don't know if this was like a standard practice where the trailer would always be the same in any movie theater you went to before a movie. I'm not sure if that was, or if it was just that we kept seeing it in the same neighborhood time after time. Because I remember my family and friends of family, they took me to see Grease several times because I loved it so much. You know, it's a musical, whatever. And I must have been little, like around 5 or so at that point. But I remember there was a trailer for The Omen. Before Grease, which is like, what are you doing, you know? But the trailer for The Omen freaked me out so much that the adults would have to take me out into the lobby and wait, and then they would have to signal, okay, he can come in now because the trailer's over. Like, that's how hypersensitive I was as a little kid to horror movies. And it wasn't up until I was older where I was living in Jersey, and some friends of mine, this is after Night of Living Dead, because even after Night of Living Dead, I watched them, and I watched Night of Living Dead, but even after that, I was still not hardcore into them, but I had some friends that were into horror movies in Jersey, and in the same sort of neighborhood townhome complex, and they made me sit down. They're like, okay, you're gonna watch this movie, and it was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they were like, you're gonna see that it's not that scary, that it's not that big a deal, blah 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 blah, and they made me sit down and watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I was like, it didn't scare me, like, it didn't freak me out. I mean, obviously I thought it was freaky or whatever, so at this point I was probably not too far after Night of Living Dead, but that was the big movie where I was like, okay, there's nothing really to be afraid of here. It's not that bad. You know, it's going to be okay. It's just a movie, you know. And from then on in, I was definitely sort of a bigger fan of horror. So, that was sort of the big one. That I think it was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I saw again at the Egyptian in Hollywood as an adult. And for some reason, in the theater as an adult, freaked me out a bit more than having ever seen it on home video. So... It's just one of those things that shows you the movie going experience. So do you have a list? Because I put together like a quick list of things that I just remembered off the top of my head. I wrote down like 10, 11, or 12 or something like that.
I went from 10, and it's in no real particular order. One of the first moments I remember that just like scared me, like one of those like sort of shock scares as a kid was when the shark came out of the water in Jaws, when he was tossing the chum out into the, you know, out into the water, you know, and everything's just sort of going here, and they're having this little conversation, and then all of a sudden this thing just sort of comes out of the water, and, you know, and of course he's got the famous line, "We're gonna need a bigger boat." Like, that was one of the first moments I remember that just like totally, like, I just jumped, and, you know, like, wow, like, that I remember that moment being a particularly scary moment for me.
Oh yeah, but so the moment where the guy pops out of the bottom of the boat, like the corpse, that didn't scare you more than the shark coming out of the water?
Actually, I think I may have been covering my hands, covering my eyes.
That's really funny because, yeah, I mean, Jaws. That's that moment is amazing in that movie, and that movie obviously. I mean, I don't need to tell anybody, Steven Spielberg. It still holds up, you know. Because I rented it on I bought it on Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray, for anybody who doesn't have it, is amazing. You know, anybody who's like a film geek like us, that Blu-ray is just beautiful. And even as an adult watching that movie, you know, obviously the shark looks a little faker than he did when we were little, but that shot is so well composed, and that whole sequence is so well directed that, yeah, it definitely gives you the willies, mm-hmm. for sure. Oh man, were you like me? Like, I couldn't even go near the toilet bowl.
Dude, we lived in Hawaii, you know. I mean, you're.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, I was a little freaked out about it, but I also, you know, I had people who, you know, they were divers and they were swimmers, and they were like, no, you know, it's not like that. And I remember my dad actually bought me a book about sharks that, like, explained, you know, how they really were, and, you know, it's, you know, they did their best to try to, you know, talk me through that one, because, you know, it would have been bad to not be able to go in the water when you're surrounded by it.
Yeah, no, and I should say, I was afraid to go near the toilet because it had water in it. Let's just clarify that. Yeah, like, I even sitting on the pot when I was little, I was just like, oh my gosh, is a shark gonna come out? And, you know, I'm 5 years old, it's an obviously still very sensitive kid. Oh, that's great. That's a great moment for sure. One of the first ones I have written down here is Ringu. And I remember getting this on probably off of eBay, having heard about the movie and thinking, you know, The Ring to American listeners, but and hearing about it and that it was really good and the story was really good, and as an adult watching it on DVD, and probably, yeah, I must have gotten it off of eBay or Amazon or something. I don't know if it was in wide release here. I don't know if it was a, you know, from Hong Kong or whatever, you know, one of those things where it hadn't gotten an official release yet. And the moment in the movie where the chick comes right out of the TV and sitting in the dark watching that movie freaked the hell out of me. And I know that there's people out there that are probably going to, oh, what are you talking about? Like, that's not that scary. But, or for people who have seen the American remake, you know, which is a pretty good remake. I mean, that's a pretty good movie in and of itself. But Ringu, the reason that freaked me out so much is because you're watching this movie, and again, it's very much sort of a bit in the Japanese style at the time, where everything's kind of slow. It's on the mellow tip. You know, it's not like really. It's creepy. There's things kind of happening. There's a decent story, but you don't expect like any sort of big effects work or anything like jarring to happen, because it's kind of lulled you into a sense of, you know, maybe, I don't want to say comfort, but like it lulls you into a sense of what it is, which is like, okay, there's not going to be anything like really horrifying here. It's just creepy. And then the moment where that sort of effects or piece happens in the movie was so jarring, sitting watching it in the dark at night, that I was just like, whoa, you know, like, I did not expect that to happen at all. So that was very freaky to me. What are your thoughts on that?
I really liked that a lot. And you know, the American remake, when they did that, they did this great promotion, and I think I still have this thing where they left these unmarked videotapes around different cities. Oh. They left them around Pasadena. I actually found one in Pasadena, and they just left them on like bus benches and you know, like tables. They contained the you know, sort of surreal video footage of the you know, of what you were watching, supposedly the film that they're watching, and then, you know, within 7 days you die, you know. And so they actually left little copies of this thing around, and which I thought was like a great promotional thing, you know. It was a nice little
Did you watch the tape?
Yeah, of course I did, you know. I mean, that's the fun part of horror, you know. It's like, you know, would you, you know, you sort of dare yourself. It's like, would you do it in if you were there, you know? And so yeah, I really like Ringu a lot. That is a really creepy moment when she climbs out of the TV, because it's just so well shot, and you know, and it is a little bit sort of unexpected.
And it's really funny, because I don't think in the American version it was that effective. Because it's so much a higher budget film that you have higher expectations of it. So that when, and obviously if you've seen Ringu and you're going to see the Ring, you know what's coming. So it's definitely not as effective. But I'd be interested to hear somebody's opinion who had never seen, Ringu, and what happens in the ring of that shot. But what's your next pick?
My next pick is a movie called Black Sunday, and I've talked with you before about this. It's Mario Bava's first movie. He's a Italian filmmaker, and I've seen this a few times, and it's just creepy every single time. The entire movie's shot on sound stages. Even the exterior stuff. So it's got this very creepy, decaying look to the entire movie. And at the beginning of the movie, they're putting this woman to death for being a witch. And they have her like tied up to the stake and everything. It's Barbara Steele, actually, who is playing it. And they, you know, suddenly, like, they bring out this mask that they're going to put on her. And it's this metal mask with all of these spikes inside the mask, you know, like that they bring over and they're going to put on their face. And they actually bring the mask up to the camera as they're putting it on. And it's like they're putting it on you, the viewer, you know. And to a little kid, it's just like, oh, my God, you know, you've got these really sharp things coming through. And then there's the sound of the mask, you know, going on and crunching. And that scene is just the most terrifying scene for me, because it's, you know, when I was watching it, it just feels like you're there, and it puts you, it's interesting, what it does is it kind of puts you in the place of the villain too, you know. You sympathize with the villain through this whole through the whole movie, because you've seen what they've done to her, you know. And you know, it's just really simple but highly effective. I still, like, you know, like, it's still, just thinking about that still gives me chills.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on Turner Classic Movies, and I think that this is one of those movies and that you need to sort of see in the theater to appreciate, you know, the full scope of it. Because the thing that I remember being struck with, even having a big, you know, large size television, is the thing that blew me away about that movie is the black and white photography, just how beautiful everything looked. And I think that moment that you're talking about, I remember watching it for the first time and saying, like, oh, wow, that is a really neat sequence. That's really well done. That's cool. Yeah. And Barbara Steele, she's nothing to sneeze at either.
No, she's fantastic. She plays multiple roles in the movie too.
Yeah.
And, it is a good movie. One of my top horror movies.
Yeah. Well, so this sort of leads me to another Japanese selection, which is Audition. Yeah, and I know by now most horror fans have already seen Audition. I've actually come across people who have not seen it, and I don't know whether to recommend it or not, but obviously for me, the moment, and I think the moment for everyone, you know, when things turn bad, date night, I put down here. Yeah. I put down date night. I wrote down date night. So, you know, for those not in the know, Audition, Japanese film about a man who, I think he's a widower, correct? Yeah, and he's lonely, and he's in the movie industry, or at least his friend is, and they decide to hold auditions to see if they can find an actress for him to date or become his mate. And obviously, we're kind of spoiling things here, but I don't want to spoil it too much. But just to say that...
he gets more than he bargained for.
He gets more than he bargained for when the stuff finally goes down. And the way I watched this movie was on the Sundance Channel, mm-hmm. I believe. And I'd heard about it again, and I saw that it was coming up, and so I recorded it. And this was one night that my wife happened to be out of the house. And so I don't know what she was doing, whether she was in a class or out with some friends or something. And I started watching the movie, and she got home right in the middle of the movie. And so she starts watching this movie with me, and I'm saying, oh, it's this horror movie, I don't know. Nothing really amazing is, you know, happened yet. It's very good. And then got to the end, and it kicks in, and I was like, oh my God, you know, and she's watching it with me, and she's saying, like, what are you watching?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of movies is my husband watching while I'm gone? You know, and it's just, yeah, it's that powerful.
And I think one of the most amazing things, too, is that it really does sort of, like, just turn on the viewer. It's one of those movies that, like, mm-hmm. when you're first watching it, I mean, it's a very sort of, you know, sort of almost saccharine and very, you know, sentimental and, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, but like when it goes bad, it really drags you down with it.
Yeah, big time. And that's one of the lessons that this movie taught me, and another movie, I can't remember exactly, it's a Jeremy Irons movie called Damage or mm-hmm. Damages, or I think Damage is the title. And that was a European movie that, or I don't think it was American produced, I think it was a European import, where things go very slowly during the whole movie. And during that Jeremy Irons movie, I was ready to turn it off. And then what happens in the last, like, maybe half hour mm-hmm. of the movie, maybe even 20 minutes. And it's just like, whoa, it's on. And for me, it was very much a lesson of, like, lulling the audience into complacency and making them believe that nothing's happening, this is fine. And then you just hang with it, and at some point you might even be getting bored, and then it kicks in, and you're just like, oh my God. And Audition is one of those movies where you're just la 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 la. And even when people tell you, you know, it's messed up, and you just start not to believe it, where people are yanking mm-hmm. my chain, I don't know. And then what happens, and that's it. It's all over. So, yeah, that was second of one of the things that I picked. And again, like you, no particular yeah. order, but just really loved it. What's your next pick?
You know, I know that we're probably, like, really disagree on this one, but I actually thought that the ending of Blair Witch Project was very effective.
Really?
In a similar way, not to Audition, not to that degree, but you know. But I thought that the ending was very effective because, like, they did build the tension up to the point where when the final moment comes, it is actually scary because it caught me by surprise.
Yeah, not to me. I don't want to turn this into a whole, you know how I feel about
Absolutely.
The Blair Witch. I hate the Blair Witch. It's one of the only movies I've ever gone to the box office and asked for my money back and gotten it back, you know, where I was just infuriated with, because it didn't necessarily scare me. It has a creep mm-hmm. factor, but I think for me, the end was just like a huge, huge letdown. And because I didn't even know what I was necessarily looking at and or seeing, or I didn't know what was happening. I think by the end, I'd kind of checked out because I just felt like I was dealing with a bunch of idiots lost in the woods. I'm like, look, there's the sun, head towards the west, you know. It's like, what are you doing? You know, it made no sense to me. And like I said, I thought several moments, but by the end, for that movie to make as much money as it did and just, like, set off this whole chain of other movies to follow, I guess you and I must have had a completely different experience. You know?
I think we did. And because I think by the end of that movie, I actually sort of enjoyed the end of, like, wow, what just happened? Like, where did that come from? Yeah. I actually enjoyed that. So, you know.
You know, I may actually try, and if there's ever a screening or something, maybe I'll go see it again, because I know for a fact that your state of mind or whatever, there's lots of different things that can affect the way you look at a movie, you know? And so maybe I just wasn't seeing what other people were thinking, and I'm open-minded enough, you know, to where I think that came out, what, when I was in my early 20s, mid-20s
or
something?
I think it was 99 or something maybe, like that,
yeah. Yeah. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll check it out again. I don't know if I should watch it on TV with all the lights off, or I should try and, if there's ever a screening, just check it out. But, well, I'm glad you liked it.
I the whole movie, you know. I don't necessarily think the movie as a whole hangs together, but that ending was pretty effective.
Yeah. Well, my next pick is Poltergeist.
Ooh, good one.
And the only reason that I'm really picking Poltergeist, because as I mentioned earlier, my uncle took me to see it. I was a little kid, young. I don't remember when Poltergeist came out, but I remember being young enough to where I don't remember what Poltergeist was rated. Was it PG or PG-13? It was PG. Jesus Christ. So I remember my uncle taking me to see it, and he took me to movies a lot. He was the one who would take me to movies. And not really knowing what you know, again, young, not knowing what to expect, probably going to be scary. And when the stuff goes down, like when the house starts to go crazy and the tree is crashing through the, that was it. I was just screaming my head off. Like, imagine you're sitting in the theater and a little kid just starts going, "Oh my God!" Just like losing his shit. My uncle had to drag me. This is one of the movies. Had to drag me kicking and screaming out of that theater. I just lost it. And he could not take me back in. He could not. Now, imagine you're taking a little, well, first of all, you shouldn't be taking a little kid to this movie anyway. You know, and then you pay your whatever, now it'd be $15 a ticket. Back then it was probably like $5 or whatever. And your kid won't go back into the theater. You've blown your cash and that's it. You're done, you know. And so I can imagine that my uncle might have felt bad in a way, but also really pissed off at me. But yeah, that movie scared the hell out of me. Yeah, so I don't know. What about you? Any memories of Poltergeist?
Can we put a pause on this real quick? I have to go take care of a spider for my wife. Speaking of scary things.
All right.
I'll be right back. Okay.
Spider. Yeah. Is it
spider
dead?
Spider has been killed.
Awesome. So, mushed? What'd you use?
Smushed it.
With just a shoe?
Used a paper towel.
Nice job. Anyway, so what any thoughts about Poltergeist?
Oh yeah, Poltergeist, you know, that's a fantastic, great movie. And you know what? I didn't see that one until a lot later on. I didn't see it in the theater.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah, so
well, neither did I technically speaking.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to be dragged out. Yeah, that's Tobe Hooper, right?
Yeah, Tobe Hooper with you know, huge assist from Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, but definitely one of the best, you know, sort of, I think, you know, how, like, I it's almost a subgenre, you know, like family horror, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the family against a, you know, crazy force, and that's one of the best. And that actually brings me into my next one, which is The Shining.
Ooh, of course, The Shining.
You know, which is the ultimate sort of messed up family. In you know, isolated in the hotel, and the part that I'm particularly thinking of is, you know, toward the end where sort of time is coming unstuck, and she's running through the hotel and seeing things that have happened in the hotel, and you know, like, she's just seeing like all of these strange things as she runs past these empty rooms, and you know, it's just like one of those things where, like, literally you're just unsure about what's going to pop out at her next.
That's a horrifying movie,
and you know, to me The Shining is sort of the ultimate scary movie, because it's so scary from beginning to end, because I mean, it's essentially Stephen King, you know, writing about himself as an alcoholic, you know.
Oh.
And then, like, this, so you've got this character who's just this, you know, it's just disturbing through and through, like, from the page to the screen to past the screen. Like, you know, every single little frame of that movie is so disturbing. It's hard to isolate anything, but, like, at the, you know, toward the end where things are just, like, falling apart and you're just not sure what's happening next, like, that to me just, you know, it freaks me out. It freaks me out thinking of, like, being in an environment that is just so hostile and, you know, that it, like, you know, that it knows every single thing that's going to freak you out and it's going to throw it at you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember, I think the moment for me where things really let loose in that movie is when she goes up to the typewriter.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and it's like all work and no play makes Jack a double over and over and over again. I think for me, that's, obviously there's a creep factor during the whole movie. I mean, underlying in the tension building, but that's when it starts where you're just like, okay, we are off the reservation. This is not fun at all. And I remember my one big memory of The Shining. I can't remember when I first saw it, but what I remember of The Shining was when I was a little kid being sick at home, probably with a fever or something, and the TV being on. I think that my mom had some friends over or there was some family over or something that night, and watching TV and the commercial for The Shining being on and that scaring the hell out of me. Because I distinctly remember that the ad had Nicholson with the axe, like stumbling through the maze in, and just like, Wendy, you know, like that was, I remember that being in the ad. I may be wrong in my recollection, but that is my big, like, young kid memory of The Shining, seeing an ad on TV and just being, I don't ever want to see that, you know. And now it's like one of my favorites. But yeah, and also in high school, just being a huge Nicholson fan, I used to do that, imitate that, back when I was really into acting, imitate that whole Wendy, give me the bat, Wendy, give me the bat. You know, the whole, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, have you ever read the book?
Yes.
And the book is much different than the, because I've never read the book.
Actually, the book is not that much different.
Oh, really? So what is it that Stephen King, what's he got up his butt about the adaptation? Like, what?
I wouldn't be able to tell you what, you know, what was so, you know, if you've seen the miniseries version of it, I mean, I think, you know, there's certainly, like, additional, you know, stuff that was cut out for The Shining, but I think in terms of, and you know, the way I think of adaptations, I think, is different than the way that most people think of adaptations, because I sort of think about the tone of the book, and I feel that if a movie captures, like, the feeling and tone of a book, then it's successful.
Oh.
You know, whether or not, you know, it's letter perfect, or, you know, whether they included this character or what, like, that's not me. It's like, did it capture the feeling of the book? And I think that the Kubrick version captures the feeling of that book better than anything else.
I'm going to have to read that someday. So my next pick, and I don't know whether a lot of people will agree with me on this, but I was young, and this is actually the very first sort of horror movie that I sat all the way through when I was younger in the theater. My mom took me to see this. And it was because I loved The Twilight Zone on the TV, and I guess I kind of knew what I was in for, but The Twilight Zone, the movie, I went, and I remember seeing it in the theater. I remember if it was on initial release or whatever, but my mother took me to see The Twilight Zone, and this one actually has three big moments that I remember just being freaked out by, and I can, you know, and I'll just list those really quickly, because this movie did scare me as a young child, and I think this was another PG movie. As an adult, I don't know if it's as highly regarded anymore, or if it was ever highly regarded at all. But I still like it. I still like the Twilight Zone. I mean, if it comes on TV, I'll try and sit and watch it. So the big one in the very beginning where I knew I was like, okay, this is going to be scary to me, was the whole Dan Aykroyd and what's his face? People are going to kill me for this. It's, defending your life. Albert Brooks. They're in the car and they're telling scary stories. And, I believe it's Dan Aykroyd who, they're singing songs and they're telling jokes. And Dan Aykroyd says something like, "You want to see something really scary?" And then he turns away from the camera. And then he turns around and he's like some kind of beast or where. And he's like, "Rah!" And the camera pans up. And, then all of a sudden the Twilight Zone music kind of kicks in and up into the sky. That freaked the fuck out of me when I was a little kid. When I was little, that scared me. That was the big moment where I was like, okay. But I did not have to be dragged out kicking and screaming. Mm-hmm. So I must have seen this after Texas Chainsaw, or maybe slightly before or after Night of Living Dead. I can't remember where it fits into the timeline. But there's that moment. And then there is the sequence with the kid who has the people trapped in the house, and he's got superpowers, and I believe it's Leanne Quinlan or something is the actress. I can't remember her exact name, but they go into the room with her sister, with his sister, and they open the door and she's watching a cartoon, and then they leave and the girl turns around and she has no mouth.
Yes.
And it turns out that the kid took her mouth because she kept talking back to him or something. That scared the hell out of me. The moment where she turns around, looks at the camera, and has no mouth. I was like, what is that? That's horrible. It's just, I could not deal with that. And then the last moment in that movie, you can tell that this one had an impact on me, so they did something right, at least as far as I'm concerned, is Lithgow on the plane. Right. The moment that you see the creature's face in the window, and you can see it up close, that was it. And honestly, as much as people, obviously Shatner did it first, and as much as people like say, oh, Lithgow overacting or he chews it up or whatever, I love that sequence. I think it's well directed. I think it really builds up and it builds into that sort of paranoia of like you're stuck in a tin can on an airplane and it's really uncomfortable and you're not having a good time at all. It definitely encapsulates what it's like being on an airplane and just having the shittiest flight of your life, I love that sequence, and I love John Lithgow, and I love that.
The thing about Lithgow is no one overacts like him, because he knows, like, that dude is just amazing because he knows the line. He knows the line between acting and overacting, and he, it's a tightrope act with him, and he just walks that line and never falls. Like, he's just, to me, he is one of the most amazing actors because of that ability.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm behind you on the Twilight Zone being a very effective movie, and the song that they were singing in the beginning, that Aykroyd's Midnight Special. I can't hear the song Midnight Special without thinking of the beginning of that movie. It's burned into my brain. I agree. That's a great movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Turning back to this is a much later movie, Seven. Seven is just a fantastic horror movie.
Good call.
Disguised as a police procedural. The moment I was thinking of that, just it's not even a scary moment, but it certainly like sort of pulled the seat out from under me, is the scene where John Doe, who they've been chasing through the whole movie, just walks into the police station and gives himself up.
Yeah.
Because at that moment I was like, wait a minute, the movie's not over yet. Like, how do they go, how does this movie continue? Like, what's going on? And like, And what can he do that's even worse than, you know, than what we've seen him do before?
Yeah.
You know, that Seven is definitely one of the modern scary movies that that holds up really well.
Yeah, I think Seven is definitely one of the new sort of masterpieces in horror that sort of set things in motion for a whole bunch of all the other horror films that followed it. I mean, Fincher, that's one of those movies that you go see, and not only do you remember when you saw it, but you remember what movies were like before it and after it, right?
Mm,
I mean, Fincher was just, he's just such, I mean, he is an amazing filmmaker, but that first, I think that might have been, besides the third Alien movie, I think that was like his first debut where it was his only, his own movie, correct?
Right.
And I actually have a really funny memory of Seven, because I remember being in an acting class and a lot of us wanting to go see it, and we decided that after class we would go see Seven, and it was a bunch of guys, mm-hmm. and one girl came with us who we all considered like a really nice sort of like wholesome person, you know,
mm-hmm.
and not thinking obviously it was going to be some sort of police thing, but not knowing what we were in for,
right.
and going and taking this person who we saw, I wouldn't say pure as the driven snow, but more innocent than the rest of us, and sitting in the theater kind of like looking eyes sideways at each other, being like, oh my god, what is this girl gonna think of all of us that we mm-hmm. wanted to go see this movie, because she was just like, yeah, I'll come along, you know, whatever, and then us just being like, oh my god, we are such assholes.
Yeah, I had a similar experience in college when I went to go see Dead Ringers.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, I could probably put throw almost any Cronenberg movie in there, you know, with just as far as making his audience purely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, nobody does that like David Cronenberg.
No, definitely not.
And, yeah, I remember going, like, taking a group of people, you know, they're like, oh, what movie are you going to? I'm like, I'm going to go see Dead Ringers, you know, and they're like, oh, we'll go. I'm like, you don't want to go. I'm pretty sure you don't want to come, you know. Trust me, you don't want to come, you know. And I did everything I could to sort of talk, but they're like, oh no, you know, it'll be fine. And you know, by the end of the movie, they were just like, yeah, we didn't need to see that.
yeah. I had a similar situation, that type of thing, with a movie called The Doom Generation, where
Greg Araki.
Yeah, Greg Araki, which is a messed up film. I don't know that I would classify it as a horror film, but it is a messed up film. But I remember loving The Doom Generation and telling all my friends about it, and I just loved it because it was so different and weird. And then I took a group of friends to go see it, and everyone came out of the theater and they were just like, what is wrong? I was like, what? You didn't think it was great? And they're like, you are messed up in the head. And I was like, that movie was crazy. You know, I don't know. You like different movies for different reasons. Whatever. I like The Doom. I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater, but I remember liking it. And it gave us Rose McGowan, so it can't be all that bad, I guess. My next pick is Dawn of the Dead, mm-hmm. which is obviously, I'm a big zombie head. This movie, when I first saw it, had a very big impact on me. I did not see it in the theater. One of my big memories, though, of Dawn of the Dead is walking through Times Square, again, probably with my uncle, taking me to see a movie or somebody. And Times Square, at the time I was growing up, is not like what it was today, mm-hmm. which it was very seedy, lots of adult, you know, porn theaters. They had regular movie theaters too, but they were not like the movie palaces of like today. And I remember, just, this is a poster that you would probably not see anywhere else, this giant poster, Dawn of the Dead. And you remember how movie posters along the bottom, they would have stills of the movie? Well, this one had stills, and it was like of a somebody eating something, which was obviously red and bloody, and me just standing next to this theater, we were waiting for something or someone, and just staring at that movie and thinking, like, that poster, and thinking, what could be in that movie? Mm-hmm. You know? And then growing up and seeing it, and the moment with Dawn of the Dead. Obviously, Dawn of the Dead, not great acting. I wouldn't say necessarily great cinematography, great. The genius behind Dawn of the Dead is how raw it is and how it sucks you into the story,
and
despite its flaws.
I would actually disagree with you on the acting and cinematography then.
Really?
I believe that, like, for to me, it's sort of the ultimate sort of grindhouse type picture. And I believe that it's shot really well, and I believe that the acting is actually perfect for that movie.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, obviously, it affects me. I still watch it to this day. I have the Blu-ray. I have the DVD. I had the VHS. I mean, any new, almost new iteration, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love it. So obviously, there's something. But for me, what's effective about Dawn of the Dead, again, is how it's slowly building. Things are getting worse and worse, and you're sort of getting it. It almost becomes more and more. You sort of, like, obviously, you know how horrifying a zombie apocalypse is going to be or supposed to be. But for me, what is great about Dawn of the Dead is how sort of almost nihilistic it becomes, where it's like you're trying to survive, but survive for what? What are you surviving for? You know, you're stuck in a mall, and after a while, even though, I mean, it's human nature, after a while, even though you have everything you want, everything you need, there's nothing that's fulfilling you, right? And so, in an apocalypse like that, like, what is going to fulfill you? What is going to make your life better? And in that movie, I just don't see it. You know what I'm saying? But the big moment of in Dawn of the Dead that I thought was really powerful, where I knew I was in for it, was during the police raid. There's a moment where they, like, kick open a door, and there's a zombie with, like, you know, big afro, mustache, and he chomps on the shoulder of the woman who recognizes him or something, and just tears a huge chunk. And I remember sitting there seeing that moment and thinking, oh, this is different. You know, not this is not like anything I've seen before, you know. And just knowing that I was in for a ride. Did you have any moments like that during Dawn of the Dead?
Oh yeah, the whole movie just is it's a great you know, I saw it you know, after night. And, you know, the idea of opening up that, you know, opening up that universe was really, really big for me. You know, the idea that, like, wow, okay, like, this is a story that's happening all over the world. And, you know, with all of these different people. And it was really effective, you know, because, like, it's a, I think it's one of those movies where, you know, it does sort of, like, sort of strike to the heart of, you know, the condition of, like, okay, this is a world that's been just completely altered and laid bare, and there's no going back to what came before.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, that's real. That's the horror in the movie, is the characters realizing that there is no going back to whatever there was before.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a super effective movie. I think it's probably Romero's best.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would agree with, yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, I mean, I like Day of the Dead a little better than Dawn of the Dead, but that's my next pick. But you go first. You go with your pick next. Okay, that was the first part of our Top 10 Horror Movie Moments episode. Please check out Part-Time Fanboy next week for the second part of this episode. Thanks for listening to Part-Time Fanboy, and we hope that you'll be back next week. Thanks.